And I think that started to build my tolerance for just trying stuff. And now I really just, my policy is to shoot every shot, and I'm getting really, really good at three-pointers lately.
Are you ready to ignite your business and achieve your full potential? Welcome to Building Success Stories, the podcast that empowers entrepreneurs and business leaders. I'm Ann Donnelly, your host, and I've spent over 4 decades in the business world. I've witnessed firsthand the power of perseverance, innovation, and strategic thinking. In this podcast, we'll explore the stories of successful entrepreneurs and business leaders, and we'll delve into the practical strategies and mindset shifts that can propel your business to new heights. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools you need to build a thriving business. I'm here today with a person that's made a big impact on the Glens Falls business and social communities. He's come in and he's got his marketing business and he's got great ideas around marketing and maybe not in the most conventional way, bringing in great new ideas and also hosting events, meetups, talent shows. So he's stretching the whole aspect of what someone in the business community here can do. So let's meet Chuck Copenspire of Identity Pending. Hello, Chuck.
Hi, thanks for having me. And thanks for that very, very sweet intro.
Of course, of course. It's all true. So why don't we get started just talking a little bit about how you got started. You're originally from Washington State, I believe.
Yep.
And you studied IT in college. And was that sort of your path into what you're doing today?
It's interesting because so I'm really passionate about Spokane, Washington, which is where I went to college. And I would say I got started with some networking events after college. I started working for an advertising agency that hosted a lot of really creative and unusual events. But what really got me out of my shell was I took improv classes in Spokane, and I had crippling social anxiety before where I would shake and I would be so sweaty. And then I took improv classes and I got to fail in front of people every week and realized that I survived. And I think that started to build my tolerance for just trying stuff. And now I really just, my policy is to shoot every shot, and I'm getting really, really good at three-pointers lately.
So this is really good advice for people that are a little scared of coming out, speaking in front of people. Get yourself out there. So if you need an improv class or Toastmasters or something, get yourself out there doing it.
And, you know, I'm probably going to end up saying this a lot, but I'm working with someone to develop improv workshops specifically for people to build public speaking and networking
Chuck
skills.
Chuck sees a need and does it.
I think that's the trick, is people are like, well, how do we make this happen? You literally just create a Facebook event and invite people. And I just do that over and over again. And it's kind of like a fun game, I think, to see who's going to show up and then who's going to become best friends and create something amazing that I get to go to next time.
Yeah. Okay. That's exciting.
Yeah. It's fun. Yeah. But yeah, we noticed there were no improv classes. And Jeff Hamill is a comedian who runs a show at the Lawrence Street Tavern, I think every Thursday.
Okay, which is new. It's newish. Oh. No, not Thursdays, because Thursdays is blue.
Oh, you're right. It's not Thursdays. Well, he runs them sometime at the Lawrence Street Tavern.
Okay.
And he and I both realized there were no, there is one improv troupe, but we wanted to make something more accessible for people who are maybe trying to be comedians. Okay.
If you want to know about these things, people, follow Chuck and I on Facebook, because we're both always sharing stuff and posting stuff. So
definitely true.
Okay, that's something we have in common. Mm-hmm. So from the improv, getting more used to putting yourself out there, then what was the next step for you?
I think the next big thing was I had a friend who kind of mentored me in a quiet way and started inviting me to more networking events. And she would do this really nice thing where she would think of somebody to introduce me to, and she would start the conversation for me and almost like set both of us up for success. And I realized she was picking two shy people and putting us together and helping us kind of build those networking skills. And through going to enough computer science networking events with her and realizing usually everybody's nervous and everybody's nice, I learned that if you can find the person who's most uncomfortable in the room, who is terrified on the sidelines, and ask them an easy question, you just saved that person. And they're usually really interesting. So that kind of became my strategy for I think gamifying networking, and also just meeting, like collecting introverts, which has become sort of like a side quest for me all the time these days.
It's okay. The cats are getting involved in this interview, by the way.
Yes.
So that is some great advice for networking. Mm-hmm. But so professionally, though, what were you working on at the time?
At the time, so my degree is technically in 3D animation and game development. So I got started through something called Startup Weekend, which is like a business competition. I got involved building a mobile game called Pixel Buddy for iOS. And that was when I first started working for myself. There were aspects of working in the agency that I enjoyed, but I have found that I generally need to be able to pivot quickly, try out new ideas, mm-hmm. and do stuff that's a little bit out there. And I found that owning the container, owning my own business, mm-hmm. has allowed me that freedom. So when I was about 22, I think was my
first. I was going to say, you'd be fairly young at mm-hmm. that point, yeah.
Yeah, it just happened to be a good opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I loved animating, so it was really fun to show up for that. But I always tell people back then I used to charge $15 an hour and apologize for it because it was so hard to feel valuable at mm-hmm. that time. So it's been a long road. I think it's been 13 years since I first started freelancing.
Yeah. Okay. So is there much else that went on in Washington before you came out here? So I'm curious in that whole story, but like as you feel you want to add in, what were the, because I'm curious about the steps. I think it's always a good way to get to know someone when you see their path and other people can relate or not.
I would say, so hopefully this will be relatable to people who have a lot of different interests. So if you really want to know the whole story, I wrote a book and it's called A Pocket Full of Seeds, and that tells you all the details. But the highlights are from improv. I ended up getting hired as a zombie on a sci-fi show that came to Spokane. And through that, I networked as an extra and got onto the film crew and started working as a props master and a special effects technician. Then I rode that job down to Portland and started working in Portland, Oregon, doing the same thing. And I find that I have sort of like areas of expertise that I'll return to. Because I did that for a few years mm-hmm. and then I got back into marketing mm-hmm. and then I worked for tech startups again and then worked for myself again. So it's kind of been like a constellation of skills that I sort of return to kind of intuitively. I'll kind of get an instinct about something mm-hmm. and I just have learned to really follow those instincts, and it's taken me to all kinds of interesting places.
So that's another good point, following your instincts, because one of the things I find now is I didn't have your traditional career path because I traveled and I followed opportunities that way, one of which included leaving corporate world and going and getting married and living in Ireland and then doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. And now coming back, it's like, oh, but you don't fit in this whole, you know, kind of thing. So I've had to deal with the fact that I've followed that. But it's important to follow your intuition and opportunities that come up. Mm-hmm. But it's not for everyone. And you've probably have had some challenges along the way, but, you know, you followed your heart.
Yeah. And I would say when I've learned how you can't ignore that instinct. And I would say the biggest challenges I've had have been almost not trusting myself mm-hmm. and taking on too much work, not charging enough.
I say you sound yes to the wrong real clients. Busy. Yeah. And you've got children.
Yes.
But we'll get to that. But so in the early years, you're following your intuition. You're taking on building skills because mm-hmm. that's one of the things that does happen when you're following your intuition and you're meeting all sorts of people. So you have got a wide range of industries. You're not pigeonholed. So where are you now? I mean, not now, but at this point in the story.
This point in the story. So I've got a permaculture design certificate, a nutrition coaching certificate, a computer science degree, and I'm pivoting into life coaching. And mm-hmm. I started doing that during mm-hmm. the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I feel like life coaching now, I almost don't like to tell people I do that, even though people do hire me for that mm-hmm. relatively often.
Yeah.
But I think the field of life coaching has an aura about it that I'm not crazy about.
Yeah.
And that's when I started learning sales and marketing tactics that were very manipulative. And that's mm-hmm. how I started actually developing, I think, the skill that I lean on the most these days, which is I help people create sales and marketing tactics that don't feel like you're compromising your values.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because in that life coaching world, they teach you to do so many of these like kind of secretly manipulative things that made mm-hmm. me so uncomfortable. And when I was trying those things, I felt really not energized, mm-hmm. not excited. I wasn't closing sales. And I think there's really something to that. Like some people have that skill set and I'm not going to knock it because for some industries it's sure, you know, you do mm-hmm. you, that's great. I don't like to buy from those people. Some people do. But my clients and myself, we really like to focus on relationship building for long-term business partnerships and really respecting each other through the whole process and not rushing it. But I feel like I didn't see anybody else out there, especially in the coaching space, talking about that. So pretty much I'm always sharing what's on my mind. And then people end up getting interested in what I'm talking about and usually hiring me for the things I'm processing in real time sometimes.
And those skills in life coaching are great skills to have in anything that you do when you're working with people, because you're helping them. Like I found with marketing, one of the areas that was the hardest was getting the clients to actually use the tools that you've set up for them. So the life coaching helps say, hey, you know, you seem to have a block here. What's going on there? How can we get you over that so that you are actually letting yourself be successful?
And honestly, 70% of the time, they just need me to sit next to them while they push the button. I do a lot of body doubling. It's what we call it, where sometimes you just need somebody in the room to say, you got to make that phone call. And I'm going to sit here with you until you do.
But you can't do that every day. It's helping them build that. And again, so if you go back to the improv classes, once they start doing it, then they start saying, oh, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah, when you get some of those quick wins and you start building that momentum.
Yeah, okay, good. Quick wins that helps them see and feel the progress. That's excellent.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I get to meet so many interesting people doing such weird stuff. And that just delights me that people think of me as like, Chuck is the weird one who will get it. Like, I don't have to explain to Chuck why I want to do this weird thing. They are excited that, you know, we have like a shared value of wanting to be I would say disruptive in a positive sense.
Okay. I like the way you put that. Mm-hmm. So I was going to say, because you're kind of modeling for people that it's okay to be weird. You embrace that.
And it's okay to experiment and to try something and say, well, that didn't work. And not see it as a failure, but as a hypothesis that you then learned from.
Now, something that interesting that's come up with me recently, I went to this very corporate kind of talk. In fact, it was the morning I'd met you first.
Oh, yeah.
Because you had held this meetup, which I thought was great because it got me into a more sort of artistic design kind of view of the whole marketing world versus the whole corporate thing. And then I went on to this real corporate thing. Awesome. But it was good in that they were talking about the different generations and dealing with me being, I'm a tail end of the boomers. And I did a podcast on this before about like, do the generations really matter? How much do we need to consider it? But I would often say like, what's this young snapper doing, questioning what I'm doing? And they feel like I have all this experience. Like, how do they feel that they could do this? And I've been doing this for years. So I'm learning to look at it in a different way, that it is good for people to question the status quo instead of like, why are you, these have been working for years, you know? And it's like, I'm that old person. Oh my God, I can't believe it, you know? But seeing that yes, it's like what you said, disruption, right? Now that's not a new concept. That's been around for a while. And I've been in the tech community for a while. So with all the disruptors and all and the startups and things like that. But to look at it that way versus things are not going to get better without someone that's there questioning the status quo and looking at, okay, that does have value. That is something. But maybe if we look at it this way, there is a way to be more inclusive. There's a way to reach more people, to be more efficient. So there's, you know, just be a better company.
Well, and I think a willingness to experiment and be agile is really crucial in these times, because everything about our world is changing minute by minute.
Yeah.
And so I think having that flexibility and that willingness to just, you know, once a week, try something out. And like, I've started messing around on Threads. I'm getting so much more engagement on Threads than any other platform. And I started out just like sharing silly ideas. And I'll pepper in some business stuff in there, but the relationships I'm building on Threads are, I would say, how Instagram felt like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I don't spend as much time on Threads, but the one thing I found is that's where a lot of my old Irish people. So in the, because I go back to the early days of social media, right, where there wasn't any social media when I first started in digital marketing, and then it started coming along. And Twitter was really big. I was in Ireland. So we had a really tight-knit Irish tech community and startup community on Twitter. So I was meeting people. Since being a small country, it was easy enough to travel up to Dublin, you know, and to meet. And I held tweet ups and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a really tight knit community. Then when it started to really take off, I really, really missed that. And I think a lot of us did. Threads started. And a lot of people jumped over there. They were tired of X as soon as it became X.
Yeah, it's just a different ecosystem.
Right. Because we were like, no, this is not the Twitter that we loved and really bonded over mm-hmm. and met and made great relationships over. So a lot of them had gone to Threads. And so I was like having conversations with people I hadn't talked to in ages mm-hmm. on Threads. But I forget about it.
I had the same experience. Yeah. I think I started a Threads like 2 years ago when it first came out, when I was like on an airplane mm-hmm. and I was testing it out. And I didn't see any value in it then. But I've noticed that you can make those, if you're on Threads long enough, you see those posts that it's like, I'm trying to connect with, you know, like witches, astrologers, media managers. And I find that you actually do then find those people. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the algorithm on Threads is actually focused on connecting people based on their niches versus I feel like used to do that. Mm-hmm. And now it doesn't appear that I'm really reaching anybody new. Mm-hmm. But on Threads, I reach new people. I got a million mm-hmm. views on a thread last mm-hmm. week and got a handful mm-hmm. of followers from it.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some good advice on Threads.
And just play. It's like the stakes are so low.
Yeah.
You know, if it tanks, nobody cares. Now it's a river and the river has already moved on.
It's hard to know where to invest your time though, mm-hmm. because it's, you know, because like I think my Facebook stuff automatically goes into Threads mm-hmm. and I forget about it. And I don't as hard as Facebook tries to make you go to Threads, that used to really annoy me because mm-hmm. you didn't realize you were clicking something that was going to take you to Threads.
Right.
And it was like, okay, now I'm in Threads. What am I doing here? But I forget about it.
I would say a quick thought I have about where to invest energy, because I coach a lot of people who want to be on social media but are reluctant. Mm-hmm. I always encourage people to sort of follow what is naturally entertaining for you. I always joke like you got to follow the dopamine, and I get dopamine from like testing, and then finding out what works. But I don't spend time on certain platforms that I don't enjoy. Like I'm not on X. I'm not on Blue Sky, mm-hmm. even though I kind of feel like
I've tried that too. mm-hmm. And the original feed, whatever the like default feed was, like nothing I was interested in. Then there's mm-hmm. a following feed
for the people you're connected with.
Yeah, which okay, yeah. So and then different people around have said, I'm on Blue Sky, come find me, but it's still very small numbers. There was good hope for that was going to be the place for people to go to flee X, but yeah, still to be seen, I feel.
Yeah, we'll see if it matures. But the other thing I'll say is, I think, you know, you're speaking to like some people don't have the energy or the interest to like participate in all the platforms, which I think is very valid. But I have fun going to LinkedIn and sort of, again, being disruptive and posting stuff that mm-hmm. feels a little bit different.
Non-LinkedIn-y.
Yeah. and I talk to people a lot about scroll stopping content, because it's like, if you're disrupting a pattern, if you're breaking what people expect, mm-hmm. that's how you get attention. Because so many people are still putting out just information.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, information is almost worthless now because of AI.
Yeah.
So you have to share opinions. You have to share your take on a recent trend or news.
Yeah.
But my friends who are still sort of auto-generating informational posts, nobody cares, frankly.
I think a lot of the stuff with marketing is that there's people that are considered to be knowledgeable of this, and mm-hmm. they teach people a formula, but then that formula becomes so stale. And you can tell, like, it's like, have an engaging first line of your LinkedIn, because you're only seeing the first line or so. But the way they're saying it, and it's like, so for a while, it was all about showing them behind the scenes at how you do things, mm-hmm. but not in like a fun, clever way. It's like, you know, I just realized blah, blah, blah. And then it's like a bunch of text and then a bunch of text and a bunch of text. And then sign up for my newsletter so mm-hmm. that you can get all of this information. And it's kind of like, I can see those right away. I don't bother clicking to see more of it. So
any more newsletter signups.
Also authenticity. And that's something you touched on originally, but it's something that I have really come to learn, is that if you're authentic, it's hard to go wrong, because it's good for you, but people really, really capture that, because, and it stands out because there's just so much inauthentic stuff along the way.
Well, I think I do want to acknowledge that it's terrifying to be vulnerable, but almost, I would say probably nearly everybody who decides to work with me, it's because I've shared something about my chronic illness. It's mm-hmm. because I've shared a parenting challenge. Mm-hmm. I've shared, you know, mental health struggles. And people see that and they say, my God, Chuck knows what is going on with me right now.
Yeah.
Chuck has lived experience. I've been homeless, you know, and I volunteer and help people get into housing mm-hmm. because nobody sat next to me when I needed a place to live. Yeah. And so it's like, I just want to be that person who is almost paying it backward.
Yeah.
The person who reminds me of who I have been.
Yeah.
And giving them the things that I didn't have when I needed it. Mm-hmm. And I think that those, I think, you know, when I say that information is sort of becoming worthless, I think storytelling, as always, is king. Mm-hmm. And if you're willing to be even 1% more vulnerable, you know, per week
yeah.
and share what you're really going through or what you've really survived, that's what people connect with. And that's why people trust you enough to work with you.
Yeah.
Because there's 101 people who can give you, you know,
yeah.
XYZ report or prompts or whatever. But a person who really understands you is more valuable than
anyone. Yeah. I told this story a couple times recently about a woman I was working with, and she was a marketing person for a transportation company in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. And I did an audit of all their digital marketing and then had a 2-3 hour Zoom call with her going through it all. And she said, I know that like my web guy is just going to say, you don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. And I could hear the fear in her voice. Hmm. And I'm like, wow, that's the way it was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. People were so intimidated by your web people. And that's why I was a bit different, because I was your like mom type, you know, helping you nicely get involved in all this stuff, not like saying, oh, you got to do this, you got to do that.
Mm-hmm. I know better than you, and I'm not going to change.
So I could feel the fear in her voice. And she said, he won't really do anything unless my boss tells him. Now, she's a marketing person in this business. She's a marketing professional.
Right.
Right. And the web guy is fully intimidating her into doing things the way he wants things to do and thinks things should be done. But yet I'm coming with this Tourism Northern Ireland hired me to do all of these audits and coaching with people. So they mm-hmm. saw that I had some sort of value for them. So she got that. And so I was able to get her to go to him. But I also said, you need to talk to your boss about finding another web person.
Yeah.
Because that is not right. It's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe the stuff still going, but it is. Like, you must find the same thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, people, I think there's like an archetype of like the tech guy.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think there's always going to be guys.
Talks a language you don't understand.
And that's part of how he, you know, maybe feels like an authority to people, because, you know, there's definitely like a depth of programming that, you know, I don't get into that. And I respect people who do.
Yeah.
But I would say, having worked in the tech world, I feel like even in the last 15 years, being personable has become more of the norm with tech people. But there's definitely still people who, you know, have been doing it for a long time. They do it one way, no flexibility.
And you're a real tech person, because you were doing developing and stuff. Like, I wasn't mm-hmm. a developer. I know HTML and CSS and a tiny bit of JavaScript, mm-hmm. right? I didn't know the real programming languages. Mm-hmm. I never got into that. So maybe that was part of it too. Maybe the guys that were developers, more like software developers, were not as happy maybe doing websites and wanted to make it more complicated, more like that I've got to do this, like mm-hmm. you can't do this yourself. Though digital marketing has become much more populist, easier for people to do things themselves. Not that I feel people should do everything themselves, mm-hmm. but it's deciding where it is that you need someone that might be more technical or have more experience in marketing, communications, things like that. But
yeah, especially but, for people who are starting from scratch, yeah. you know, with not a lot of yeah. funding. I think it's great if people try and yeah. then they call you or me to, like, you know, fix the 15% to get them across the line.
Yeah.
It's a good skill to build, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, sometimes you got to sit next to somebody while they're learning to punch the buttons. And I mean, I was even teaching in Ireland, a big thing was that they have all these little B&Bs that are run by these older women, right? Because like the husband's doing the farm, like mm-hmm. a lot of it's farmhouse. I was in rural Ireland, so that's why a lot of it was farmhouse in-house stuff. And these ladies were like, they didn't even know how to check their email, mm-hmm. right? So they needed me. Now, I did not want to be doing that all the time mm-hmm. because it could be very annoying.
Yes.
But, you know, but they're just trying to make a little money, you know, doing the B&B and, you know, doing a website for them, you know, in the early days when people were just first starting to get websites. And, but them being very intimidated. Like I had one client that actually had, and he was like, I don't know if he was a corporate controller or something. Mm. So he was like serious businessman, but he had an island off of West Cork and had turned the stables into vacation rentals. So I did their website and they were just starting out. In fact, him and his wife were arguing while I was saying, like, do you want to include, are you on the website, you know, stuff, you know, towels. Oh, no, we're not going to. Yes, we are. No, we're not. I'm in the middle of this couple. Right. And now I've forgotten exactly what my point was, but them learning. Oh, they didn't want to have an online booking. Right. So like I said, this is the early days. And I did found a guy somewhere that had a affordable, fairly easy, user-friendly booking engine, availability and booking calendar. But they still wanted people to call them to book. And a lot of the B&Bs were like this because they're coming into your home.
Right.
Though in their case, it wasn't their home, but they still wanted to have a feel for what people were coming. Now you couldn't get away with not having a booking engine.
No, people would just be like, meh, next.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's the whole like, oh, I'm not used to this. So you don't find as many people that are like that now.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's just the technology is just such a part of our daily lives. You know, my daughter will sort of echo things from YouTube videos that she's like, I was watching the video and they said that I should like and subscribe.
Yeah.
And she goes, can we like and subscribe? And she like wants to.
They told me to.
Yeah, she wants to follow the CTAs.
That strong call to action.
Yeah, it's fascinating watching it in real time.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a little scary, but it shows you how effective it is.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and again, you know, as we were saying earlier, how to wield that ethically, how to wield that. And for me, how to wield that in a way that's fun. I'm excited these days because I started with like Flash development.
Flash.
So very interactive, you know, like fun animations mm-hmm. and stuff. And I was like, nobody's doing that anymore. So I've started adding really light animations to my stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just makes it feel so much more engaging. Yeah. And I was talking with a friend yesterday about how those little animations can add credibility compared to all these like AI generated, you know,
just, that's what's scary.
Yeah. There's a lot of formulaic stuff coming out from people that aren't trustworthy. And I think that's again why the storytelling and relationships matter more than ever, because anybody can build a website.
And the authenticity. But scared, like AI, I'm always skeptic of anything that comes on it. Everybody's like all about it, right?
Totally.
Like I knew a lot of tech guys from Ireland that were in that old circle of mine that like quit as soon as like ChatGPT came out,
GPT, yep.
Came out, quit their jobs and like, I'm getting into AI. And mm-hmm. I'm like, ha, look at them now. They're in these companies that are like doing all sorts of amazing things with it. So yeah, definitely has its place. I have embraced it for processing content, processing information, things like that. But the images,
oh yeah,
scares me because people see things and believe them.
Yep.
And so images of like things that are going on in war-torn areas and things like that, that make it look like it's been manipulated to manipulate people's thoughts.
Right, for propaganda.
People believe what they see. That's what I find very scary about AI.
I would agree. I use AI every day for, like you say, processing, or if I have like a like messy notes and I want to send a follow-up email to a client, it's like, wow, that was done in 5 minutes and it's skimmable. But the images, I agree, there's a lot of ethical gray area. Yeah. And a lot of artists in my community are very against generative AI images because there's evidence of it stealing from real artists. So I try not to use that. But in terms of you know, being my workflows and efficiency, it's like,
yeah, oh
God, it's so nice. You just build a brand voice once and then you can tell it what your product is.
Yeah, you were telling us about a tool you were using to do that. What's it called?
It's called Content Blocks.
Content
Blocks. I do have a referral code that I can share with people, but I love it.
Add in when I do that. Yeah,
I'll send it over. But the best thing about it is, you know, with ChatGPT, it's just a chat. Yeah. And with content blocks, you can build a knowledge base.
Yeah.
And so you give it this little area where it can store documents. It can scrape YouTube transcripts. Mm-hmm. So every week, sometimes I'll go through and take all my favorite social media influencers who mm-hmm. tell me the trends, put all of their transcripts into here, and I'll say, what action item should I do this week based on yeah. the advice from these four creators?
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that just saved me 2 hours watching all those videos.
Yeah.
Because frankly, I don't need to watch. I know 90% of it, but yeah. the 10% I don't know. It's nice
so
to
it
be able
pulls
to
out like the information that's going to be useful for you. Yeah, I've been using it. I'm a guy that I used to know through a productivity kind of tool called The One Thing.
Okay,
he left there and saw with AI coming on, so he interviewed I don't know hundreds of thousands of business leaders on the use of AI and where it's going and everything, and wrote a book, and he started a community. Huh? But he posts stuff on LinkedIn all the time and some really useful prompts.
Oh, I love, yeah.
Really useful prompt. And it's all about the prompts, right? So it's like a virtual assistant to me, or like a life coach sometimes too.
Oh, I totally
because it's,
use it for that.
I find AI is useful and for a couple of things for me. A, because I'm working alone all the time. Mm. So I can, this could sound weird. I actually like talk to Gemini. I use Gemini. I got Gemini on my phone. So I'm talking to Gemini all the time. But also when I'm a bit of a procrastinator, whether it's the perfectionism or anything that is that it helps you get going.
It can. Yeah. Or if I'll say like, here's all the tasks I have for the day. Can you put them in logical order? And they'll say, okay, well, you should start with taking out the trash. And I'll say, I don't feel like doing that. Can you pick a computer task? And it'll say, respond to these emails. And sometimes just removing that decision mm-hmm. is, especially for solo businesses, very
use a tool called Motion.
Oh, I've used Motion.
Which I learned through doing these interviews. A woman told me that she was using Motion. Mm-hmm. And that then links in with my Google Calendar. I put my tasks in there and it fits everything in.
It's really
and nice. If I don't get it done, they move it. If I change priorities of something, it moves it for me. So it's really helpful.
Yeah, I used Motion a lot, especially when I was doing more social media management, because people would buy like 5 hours a week from me. And so I had to make all those
that time, yeah,
those commitments fit. And if it didn't fit, then I, you know, wouldn't. Mm-hmm. Fit. Yeah, these days I'm doing a little bit more manual time blocking, similar. Sure. Mm-hmm.
So that brings me to the one question I had early on, but I wanted to wait till we talked through a few more things. Mm-hmm. How do you do all the stuff that you do? You've got two children that are pretty young.
What's interesting is I'm so much more productive since I had kids.
Okay.
Because now I have a discrete time where it's like from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. That is the only time that I can do this. And I think the threat of being interrupted in the evening makes me get so much more done during the day. But I think part of it is I think about the word inspiration a lot. And the word inspiration comes from with spirit. Mm-hmm. And so I will say that I'm often like animated almost by this thing that needs to exist. Mm-hmm. And so by following those instincts and not saying yes to the wrong clients, mm-hmm. I'm really energized every day. Yeah. And I really listen to my instincts where, you know, maybe I do have some tasks to do that I'm avoiding, but I'm like, for whatever reason, I need to write a chapter of my book right now. I do that. I get energized.
Okay.
And then I'm ready for the emails. So I would say.
But you're doing that intuitively?
That's part of why I'm not using Motion anymore. Okay. Is I sort of know what free time I have in my day mm-hmm. and what tasks I want to do, mm-hmm. but I don't say I have to complete this task at this time. I sort of check in with myself and say, like, do I have running around energy? Is this when I'm going to go hang flyers? Like, am I so antsy that if I tried to sit down, I just
you take a little bit of time to check in with yourself to see where your gut is sending you, just like with your career.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd say is that everything I'm doing, I am almost upset that it doesn't exist yet. so that dissatisfaction
keeps you going.
Yeah.
Pushes you to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
'Cause you're seeing something that's not there that you want. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're building a lot of these communities for yourself, right, as well as for the greater community.
And part of that is because on the West Coast, all these things existed and I loved them. And so I wish there was an ecstatic dance community. And it's like, well, I'll have to build that next year because this year I'm building an improv community and, you know, a talent show. And so that's the other thing is I have to pace myself with my dreams, and I give myself seasons to focus on specific dreams.
Okay, that's good.
But there's a season. These will run themselves eventually.
Yes, that would be the goal, right? Mm-hmm. So as I said, you've got a lot of things that you're initiating right now. Mm-hmm. So why don't you just, it's a long list of things, but let's go with it.
Yeah. So the things that I'm cooking on right now are, I'm working with Shane and Heather from the Hub Gallery and the Shirt Factory. And we are opening a co-working space right next to Sweetside Records. And so we're going to rent out, we have like a conference table. We're going to have permanent desks. We're going to have drop-in spaces. People can rent it for events or meetings. And then, you know, like you said, building things for myself, I need a place to host all of my things that I'm doing without needing to borrow space from others. So a lot of my things are going to be run out of there. But Shane and Heather are going to move their gallery there. So people who like buying their art and the things they make, that will all be shifted there. And we'll be doing, you know, house shows and, you know, sort of more creative events like they were hosting at the Hub Gallery. So I'm really excited about that. But the backbone of that that I'm even more excited about, which I don't think I've told you about, is I'm creating an AI-based referral network of local experts. Mm-hmm. And so people who are in the co-working space will kind of be the first people opted into that referral network. But the idea is a person can come to my tool and say, I need a website for $1,500, or like, here's my budget, here's what I need. And it will assemble the experts that who already know each other and already work together.
Wow.
And it'll pull from their availability and tell you, like, if you, you know, you can hit yes and book these people, and then they'll all come to the co-working space, work together, get it done. And so hopefully we can more efficiently get the introverted freelancers some work and get business owners, you know, investing in local services rather than maybe more far away digital marketing services.
That sounds really exciting.
I'm like really jazzed about it. It's fun to be building an AI tool. I haven't built anything in a while.
So you're still doing marketing for people, all various types of marketing things. You're hosting events. You're starting the co-working space, AI-based referral network. So much stuff going on.
And I would say I'm really loving doing the digital marketing coaching, a little bit of done-for-you stuff. But what I'm noticing is that my real skill set is connecting people and building infrastructure for things to get done. So my goal is to keep doing coaching, keep doing mentorship, but build this tool so that I can sort of help manage those referrals and the management of the teams. But I would love for maybe people who are a little newer in the field or more specialized in the field to be doing more of the actual production. Because I've realized I can do it, but it's not where I get my energy.
Exactly.
And I have to lean into the energy, otherwise I'll get tired.
So it's good having a network of people that you can refer people to for those other things.
How many of us in the digital marketing field are doing 40% stuff we don't want to be doing?
Yeah.
Why not hand that off to someone else?
That's what I always say. People should specialize and work together versus I can do it all myself.
Right. But it's like hard to connect around that. And so I'm hoping this system I'm building and the space I'm building will facilitate a little bit of ease around collaboration.
It sounds like it definitely will.
We'll see. Hopefully.
How did you end up in Glens Falls? How long have you been in Glens Falls?
So I've been in Glens Falls. It'll be 3 years this September, I believe. So my partner grew up in Queensbury. He was really big in the wrestling scene. And basically, we met in Portland. I was raising my daughter by myself. And he and I started dating. And it was going really well. And then his sister was going to sell a house that has been in their family for over 100 years. And she basically gave us 5 days to decide if we were going to buy this house.
Lots of time to think it over. Yeah. Life's decisions.
Yeah, just moving across the entire country, you know. So I'd been visited Glens Falls once for 5 days. Mm-hmm. And we just decided we wanted to be close to Jared's family because we knew we were going to have a second child.
Yeah.
And it's been really sweet. I didn't know what Glens Falls was going to be like. My hometown does not have as much going on.
Okay, because I was going to say it sounds very different to where you, like you said, that you wanted to start these things because where you were before had these things.
So Spokane is a beautiful example of an interconnected community that is all supporting each other. And there's just everybody is making sure everybody else is having opportunities.
Yeah.
And there's all these fun little groups. But my hometown of Cashmere, Washington. Super small.
Cashmere, like the sweater or like the country?
It's named after the mountains, but it is spelled like the sweater.
Okay.
Because it is in the Cascade Mountain Range. It's very beautiful, but there's no open mics. There's no business meetups. There's no shirt factory. There's actually so much of like a creative underground in this town, mostly centered around the shirt factory. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the drawing night on Wednesdays. There's these talent shows we're starting. Mm-hmm. There's just so much to do here. So I've been really pleasantly surprised. And then the queer community that's growing out of Black Walnut Books, Pastel yeah. Prints, Lower Adirondack Pride. It's been mm-hmm. really exciting to get involved in that community okay. and support that community yeah. too.
It's very new though. And that's one of the things I was talking about when it comes to Glens Falls. Like I lived in New York, I lived in London, mm-hmm. I lived in rural Ireland. So I was in rural Ireland before I came here, mm-hmm. but it's a lot more conservative than I realized.
Here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like if you're talking about numbers of people, but it's finding these pockets. That, but it's really starting to come on now.
And the other thing I'll note just from West Coast versus East Coast is the conservative people there, I found, were less friendly towards people like me.
Okay.
But here, people with, you know, Trump flags on their front lawn mm-hmm. are my neighbors and our kids playing in the street together. There's not a big division here in the way that I experienced in some mm-hmm. places in the West. So for all our ideological differences in this yeah. area, I do feel very safe and very welcome and respected, which is
that nice. Is wonderful. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And for starting all these amazing new things that I get to take advantage of. So
please, everyone, please right, take advantage.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll list all that off. I'll put all your links in the episode notes and on the website where I'm going to post it. And we'll be sharing this out all over.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Thank you for joining me in this episode of Building Success Stories. Are you ready to take your business to the next level? I've got you covered. Visit my website, AnnDonnellySuccessStories.com, to access additional resources and sign up for my newsletter. And to work with me directly, visit AnnDonnelly.com to learn more about my services as a fractional COO and business consultant. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform and never miss an episode. Until next time, keep building your success story.